I can come 2 days a month, then the equivalent of my entire month's salary at Coca-Cola, and I can find other clients as well to fill in the other days. So the light bulb started going on. So I really didn't have the thought that this is going to be a global business and we're going to crush the world and dominate in it. I really took a chance on a random phone call. It could have gone south 100 different ways. And then I was able to leverage that into a few other projects. I went into sort of property development.
Hey there, peeps. This is Michelle Nedelec. Thank you for listening to the show. I would love if you could give us your opinion on how you felt about the show, your experience that you have in regards to what we've been talking about. I am having an absolute blast, but your input is like dynamite on that explosion. So give us your input. We'd love to hear from you. Any questions, comments, concerns? Give us everything you got. We love it. Thanks. Hope you're having an awesome day. Welcome to 7 to 8, our special series on 7 to 8 figure entrepreneurs. In this special series, I interview million dollar, some $10 million, and even some million dollar business owners who uncover their twists and turns in their entrepreneurial adventure in order to help you to avoid the potholes and stick to the fast track. Welcome now to Center Stage, our next special guest. Hey there, peeps. This is Michelle Nedelec, and I am super glad that you're here with us today because I am here with my most amazing guest, Peter. Peter, thank you so much for being here with us today.
I just want the audience to know I didn't pay you to say that. It's really important that's not a paid, and it's not a paid endorsement.
Not yet. There will be one midway through the show, but I'm kidding. So give everybody the highlight of who you are and what you do for business.
All right. Serial entrepreneur, built six global businesses. Raised tens of millions in venture capital, created more than 200 million in enterprise value over time, over 30 years of business. And right now, I use that experience to mentor entrepreneurs. I take all my lessons and make sure you don't have to learn them.
Yahoo! Thank God there's somebody doing that. So what made you decide to go into mentorship as you think?
A combination of things. Here's one of the stories. So I met a guy on a boat in Mexico. I'm on a boat going out of Puerto Vallarta to a little retreat, little yoga retreat, and a big hand lands on my shoulder. And I turn around and it's this big, bald guy. I mean, big. I'm 6 foot something, right? And he's taller than me. And I look up and he says, "Hi, my name's Bob. I'm not very smart and I suffer from low self-esteem. Will you be my friend on the boat trip?" And I'm like, "Come on, big fella. I'm your friend. Come sit in the front and let's chat." Turns out, very interesting fella. He's a coach. And I had him move in with me. Eventually, I convinced him to come and live with me. Leave your wife and come live with me. I need some coaching.
Okay.
And he did. He moved in with me. And he's a superstar, right? He'd won an Olympic medal and a couple of Grey Cups. And, coach of the national wrestling team that won the, blah, blah, blah. So just a superstar in all respects. And he moves in with me. And 24/7, I'm being coached. And changed my life in so many ways. I realized I'm a lousy executive. I'm a good entrepreneur, zero to one, but from 9 to 10 takes a different skill set that I honestly didn't have, and I deluded myself into thinking I had. And I realized the power of having somebody embedded in my life, how important it was. So gave that up and said, "Listen, I'm not going to do business number seven. I'm instead going to capture all, harvest all the lessons I've learned, and help other entrepreneurs." So that, and probably because I was burnt out. Either one of those stories is true, either one of those facts. Either I was burnt out or I had this amazing experience with this crazy guy who came to live with me for a year.
Well, and the contributing factors don't always hurt, I find. It's like, if it had just been that, it probably wouldn't have worked out. But because there were all these other things that kind of salt and pepper the decision, it's like, oh, okay, yeah, this tastes pretty good.
I was burnt out as well. I was diabetic. I was 300 plus pounds, and it's hard driving type A. I was a recovering muscle with less recovery. So, okay, needed to right the boat. So yeah, I had to sort some things out. Did it. Lost almost 100 pounds. Reversed my diabetes. Did all the stuff with some coaching, some mentoring, and realized, okay, I might have some value to add in the world.
I love it. So I want to kind of back up the bus a bit. We'll totally get into the mentoring and what that looks like in a little bit. But kind of backing up the bus, running your businesses, particularly kind of the million dollar businesses and things, when When you started off those businesses, did you intend for them to become as big as they were, or was it kind of a passion project that took off and took a life of its own? How did that all happen for you?
Okay, so I'd love to say I had this plan where I analyzed the market, saw a niche, went after it, convinced investors that we're going to make a killing here. The reality is my first business, I started out of desperation. I was fired from my job as a key account sales rep with Coca-Cola. I told my boss to go and fuck himself. And as a result, they showed me out the door. And that was my last job ever. So I'm unemployed. I'm broke. I don't have a company car anymore. So I've got nowhere to get to places. And a friend said, hey, you know, come to the space. I'm having an office space renovated. Why don't you come? You can sit there. There's a phone line and a Yellow Pages. I'm dating myself now, the Yellow Pages. And you can call businesses and see if you can find a job. So it was a Monday morning, and I'm sitting pondering my fate. The sunlight is streaming in, and it's one of those offices that used to have drywall between, but the drywall's been ripped out, and the carpet's still there with the cutout sections of the drywall. This lonesome desk.
In a Herb Tarlick office or something.
Exactly. And I'm like smelling the smoke from the previous smokers used to be in the office, and just grim, the you know, nicotine stains on those hanging blinds that cheap office buildings have. And the phone rings. Okay. So I pick it up and I say, how can I help you? I don't answer the phone by saying, you know, what do you want? I say, how can I help you? And it turns out the previous owner of the phone was a value-added reseller of software, payroll software. And so the person calling thought they'd come to a company that did value-added reselling for payroll software. And I didn't disabuse them of the notion. I just kept asking, okay, so tell me more. What version of the software are you using? What was the name of your package again? What computers are you running it on? No worries, I'll be there Friday and I'll solve your problem. What happened is the person who did payroll had absconded. They had a very militant union in their factory, 500 people. If payroll was out by a cent, the union would burn the place down. So no worries, I'm going to be there to solve the problem. True story. So I drove over to the company, bought the developer pack, borrowed a 386 Sunrace, loaded up the stiffies in it, learned to program, decrypt files, do all the stuff. Didn't sleep for 4 days because I'm determined to not let this person down. And I went and solved the problem. And I ran her payroll for her, did the coinage reports to the bank, all that stuff in the day. This was when outsourced payroll was becoming a thing. And she was super happy with the job. And she asked me, well, how much do I have to pay you for this? And I hadn't thought that far. And so what she offered me was the equivalent of my salary, my entire salary before taxes at Coca-Cola. And she said, but you're going to have to come in 2 days a month. And it dawned on me. So I can come 2 days a month in the equivalent of my entire month's salary at Coca-Cola, and I can find other clients as well to fill in the other days. So the light bulb started going on. So I really didn't have the thought that this is going to be a global business and we're going to crush the world and dominate in it. I really took a chance on a random phone call. It could have gone south 100 different ways. And then I was able to leverage that into a few other projects. I went into property development, built a risk and treasury management function for large EPCM firms, where I used the ability to outsource payroll, to manage payments to projects around the world. Kellogg's, Root Brown, Halliburton, Fleur, these kind of companies use these services. And I sold some of the core technology I developed off to IBM. Contractor sourcing became a module within IBM's processes in the end of the day. So no, the last iteration I did, though, I wanted to solve a problem in electronic waste. My story there, Michelle, is my mother had died. And I got a letter from my mother after she died. She lived in South Africa. And this letter, airmail arrived, but my mother's dead now. And the letter read, "Dearest Peter, I've just come from a meeting with Michael Musk," and in brackets, Elon's uncle. Because, you know, it's like royalty. You know, somebody in the, we grew up in the same community in South Africa. "Michael tells me Elon has launched a rocket ship into outer space and successfully brought it back to Earth and landed it on a platform floating in the Pacific Ocean. How's your career coming along? Love, Mom." I know. So I thought, thanks, okay, Mom. Now I've got to do something. I've got to prove to my mom I haven't been a waste of oxygen. Because I failed school and I wasn't exactly the model kid growing up. And so I set out intentionally to to figure a big problem and then solve it. And electronic waste was the fastest growing waste stream in the world. Nobody really had a solution for it. So with some very smart friends, we found a solution, large scale sound waves. We put them underwater and we extract the precious metals from waste electronics without needing acids or incineration. And so essentially of the 2.5 billion devices that get sold every year, we had to figure out where do they go to die? Where's heaven for electronic devices? And so that was an intentional business where I wanted to do something. I wanted it to be big. I wanted it to be global. But all the others were simply opportunistic, saw the opportunity, went in, did something there. And, it happened to succeed despite us in the way. So, that's some stories for you.
That was awesome. I love the tenacity, for starters, the intestinal fortitude, and the, hey, yeah, I can do that. Not having a clue what it was. It was like, I don't know, figured out. I got 4 days.
Awesome. My wife calls it my reality distortion field. When it's like, no, I've got 7 children, right? So like, when are you going to do this? Like, you've got to have time for the kids. Oh yeah, I forgot about that. Okay, I guess I didn't factor that.
Forgot about.
I can't do that. You have to do that.
7 little beings running around my house. How do you forget about them? That was awesome. So now when you're working with people and you're mentoring them, what things do you find are get most often getting in people's way?
Yeah, so it's interesting. It's really the basics that people find hard to grasp. And the basics are, it's almost always about, so I've got 3 rules, right? So my 3 rules that I apply for everything is, one, success is all in the setup. And I find people don't do a good job with the setup. For example, I was talking to a client today, have to terminate somebody, but they don't have a comprehensive checklist on how to do this. They don't know, two of you in the room, we do it. What's the procedure to get the laptop back? Which table do you sit in the coffee shop? Where do you face? Who handles the company car? How does it get cleaned? They don't have this process done. So they lack the setup for how to get this right. Or they don't have a financial model that we can play with forecasts, run scenarios, help them decide what risk to take. So number one, they don't do a good job of the setup. Number two, they don't understand success. Rule number two is all about relationships. So they very often come with a functional problem. Oh, if I just have, better SEO, my business will do well. Or if only I learned how to sell better. It's always a relationship problem, not enough relationships. So that's another big problem that people make, typical problem. And three is they don't have a shift of context, which is rule number three. So they're unable to see things from a completely different angle. For example, if you're not able to see that this person's actually costing you money in the business, nothing I say or do will help persuade you that if you replace a C player with an A player, there's not only the getting rid of the C player, but the opportunity cost that the C player is leaving behind. So for me, it's the 3 problems are encapsulated in one. I see people make it all over the time. And the only value I really bring is being outside the jar. I can read the label on the outside of the jar while the entrepreneur is stuck inside.
Well, and it is so easy to get stuck in the emotional charge of, but I'm so emotionally charged with this. Yeah. I'm like plugged in on all cylinders, and it becomes a difficulty to see business objectively. Yeah, fascinating point though, being able to see things from different perspectives. Do you find that that is a skill set that can be learned? Is it an aptitude that somebody has? Is it something they have to practice? How does one acquire the sense of taking on different perspectives?
So 3 things, right? One is yeah-buts live in the forest. If somebody yeah-buts me, I just say, hey, yeah-buts live in the forest. If you want to yes-but me, this is not a fit, right? Two, there's a phrase by Shelley, which goes bastardized, a man persuaded against his will is of the same opinion still. And so I've learned not to try and impose an outside perspective on somebody. If somebody's not coachable, it's not going to happen. And third one that I learned from one of my mentors is, when the student is ready, the teacher will appear. And it really expresses the notion that before I work with somebody, I have a checklist. I send them a one pager and it says, listen, before we're a fit, I need to see if we're aligned here. And I've got my list of things and it asks some questions such as, have you ever invested in yourself before for this type of thing? Because if you haven't, why are you suddenly doing it now? Right. And so I've got my little checklist. And I want to know that we're aligned before we start working. So I make sure I don't waste time with the earbuds, people who know better, the uncoachables. They're there and I see them lack progress every year. Whereas the people who are open to the coaching, they hit this accelerator, this train, and they start operating in a different atmosphere to the other people who are still making the same mistakes year after year.
Is there a level of aptitude or business experience that you're looking for? Like, do they have to be at a certain level in their business?
So the answer to that is how long is a piece of string, right? Yeah.
Excellent.
As any good lawyer will tell you, it depends. So,
Exactly.
typically for me, I like to work with entrepreneurs who've had a few years of experience under this. I run a group where I kind of crowdsource for entrepreneurs who can't afford my fees. I'm expensive. So I crowdsource this for groups and I'll do it on a group basis so that I'll still be able to help you. You'll be able to get some benefits, some one-on-one mentoring, but without the finite nature of my time, right? I'm going to spend it where I get paid the most. So for entrepreneurs who are not quite there, of course, come on in. I'll help you. I'll get you started. I'll point you in the right direction. If you've got a question I can answer in a few minutes, I'd love to help. So I'm always open to helping somebody. And when they're at the stage where they can benefit from me, sure, then we can talk about whether it's a fit to work together.
Nice. Are there any kind of what I'm going to call unicorns of kind of somebody that does international business? They deal with land and finances, and they're running a, $100 million company and going, yeah, those ones in particular, I can totally help them. And, Frank's Plumbing, and that's awesome too. Do you have any unicorns that you're like, oh, yeah, if they can't find anybody else, I'm the guy?
Actually, my criteria is do they have humility? If it's just one big, pissing contest, look how great I'm great, you're not, then that's my anti. Let's have an anti-unicorn. Instead of
There
having a
you
unicorn, let's have the anti-unicorn,
go.
right? So I've turned down working with guys who built billion-dollar businesses and so on because of that. Listen, if you're the smartest, brightest, most talented, I'm great, you're not type guy, I'm just not interested. For me, Frank's Plumbing is a way better prospect if not all the case, if Frank is humble, if he's got some humility, if he's down to earth, if he's open to coaching, I will help Frank, and his local plumbing business exceed his potential. That's what I'll bring along. I'll speed up his success, but I can't help the guy who's got the billion-dollar business become a better human being. So I'll give a pass on that, and I have to I'll pass on the anti-unicorns.
Absolutely. It's as one of my great friends put it, if you're the kind of person I want to invite into my home and drink wine with, I'll work with you. If you're not, I my life's too short.
And when you're the kind of person who brings several bottles with you, I like even more. Come on.
There you go. See, I knew
You
I'd
might
find
come
you
and
a
just want to
unicorn.
drink all
Yeah.
my wine. I'm like, I don't know if it's going to be a fit or not.
Awesome. So when it comes to working with you mentioned that we go through a questionnaire kind of clientele, see if it's a good fit for you, and then kind of what is the process look like, or the kind of the things that you're taking through. Is there anything that they should be prepared for, kind of have their financials set up and ready for you, or something like that, or is it just kind of lay it on the table and see what happens next?
So two things. One, I only work by introduction. So I'm only going to work if you know somebody that introduces you to me. Obviously, you have to find somebody to get to me. So I'm not just going
That'd
to
be
have
me,
somebody
peeps.
random and they've sort of pre-screened, qualified somebody through. And so I think there's a good point just to explain the difference between mentoring and coaching. And so typically, if you work with a coach, it's going to be more short-term or episodic. And the coach might come in and say, hey, I need to coach you on sales, or I need to coach you on your financials and get that right. Mentoring is more long term. So the first time you'll meet, I'll typically take a minimum of 2 hours. If somebody's not willing to meet me for 2 hours, I'm not interested in having a further relationship with you. I don't do meetings that are less than 2 hours. I simply don't. If it's that unimportant, it's not worth my time. So the first time we'll get together, we'll talk for 2 hours and you'll get to see how I think, how I add value. And only after that will we both be in a position to decide, well, is it a fit to actually have a conversation about what we're going to accomplish together? So it takes at least 2 hours to get to know what's important, what matters, where your top challenges are. And then when I work with somebody, I typically like to have the implicit agreement that it's for at least a year, maybe longer. because you're not going to absorb everything I have to teach you or work together in just 12 months period. So for me, it's more longer term, slow burn, put good fundamentals in place. And then the business changes over time. So the individual will change and their business needs will change. So maybe they haven't hired a CFO yet. Well, onboarding a CFO takes time, got to do it correctly and so forth. Moving from maybe a fractional CFO to a real CFO, just guiding you through this. Or maybe you've got changes in shareholders. You've got a challenging board meeting coming up. You need some help negotiating that or managing that. Or you need to raise extra capital. What does that look like? Or you're in the acquisitions and mergers game. What does it look like there? So there's so many seasons that businesses go through that it's rather I want my potential clients to see me as a mentor rather than a coach coming in for a specific project.
Nice. And so what would you say is your favorite part of your business?
Double paycheck, definitely the double paycheck. I get paid once because I add value. Like I said, I'm expensive. People know what they get for. But secondly, I truly get to see entrepreneurs thrive and exceed expectations. I was talking to a client today, and they'd gone from about $500,000 a month to $2 million a month from the start of the year to now. And I've watched the change in the confidence. When they were at the previous level, they were struggling payroll. They were struggling to make payroll. They were, maxed out credit cards. They were growing too fast. We got their growth rate equation right. Now they're growing with cash flow positive. They got a positive cash conversion cycle, and they're walking tall. And the guy's saying, I'm hitting my 38th birthday this weekend, and I'm feeling like $1 million. And he's back in the gym, and he's doing CrossFit. And you look at this like, what happened to you in the space of this period, right? And I can say to them, truly, I'm truly proud of you. I'm proud of how far you've come, the grit you've put in. So for me, that is the second paycheck. What can I say? I love it. I wouldn't want a different thing to do at this stage of my career.
So give us an example of a Cinderella story of one of your clients.
Okay, let me think of a good one. I got a lot of them.
Yeah, really good one.
And I want to think of a of a really good one. I've got one. So have a client who's got a very complex business, right? Very, very challenging, many moving parts, dependent on multiple stakeholders that they have to deal with. And the entrepreneur's burnt out. But he's got some money in the bank. He's got several million stashed away. Young enough that he can still do something else, got good investments, maybe 10 million in investments. He's done really well for himself and kept plugging away. And so one of the questions I asked him was, okay, so what's on the bucket list here? What's on the vision board? And it turns out that he had a whole lot of stuff that he wasn't getting to. And so my work was actually to help him wind down his business, help him get out of it. And it took us a while. We had a few false starts. We brought somebody in to be as like GM as a successor. Didn't work. My mistake. I thought he was good. Gave him my endorsement. What a flake. So messed up there. Then we found him the right person who could start to step in and take over. And a year later, he had this dream to go sailing, right, in the Fiji area with on his like list to do. We finally packed him off to do, but we got him sailing lessons before then. And we put all this plan in place to help him wind down from being a successful entrepreneur to having more balance. And part of it was he really wanted to spend more time with his kids. And he wanted somebody from the outside to help him put the plan together to make it happen. So his kids are still young. His kids are, sort of 6 and 8 kind of age. And for me, that's the Cinderella story where he'd already reached a high level of success, but real success for him wasn't a bigger business, wasn't a more successful business. It was truly being able to say, hey, I've reached the stage. Here's how I want to go forward. This is what matters to me.
Nice. I love it. That is fantastic. Well, I know that our peeps are going to want more from you. So how did they start their journey with you?
So hit me up on LinkedIn is the easiest way to find me. If you go to my website, peterholgate.com, you'll just find recommendations. There's no way to contact me. There's just a list of recommendations that you keep scrolling and you keep scrolling and you keep scrolling. So find me. It's Peter Holgate. Find me on LinkedIn. I've got a... find me, Peter Holgate. So that's something. If you can't find me on LinkedIn, it's probably not worth your while doing anything else. And because all my projects, even my group project, I call it the 1110 Collective, even my 1110 Collective requires you to talk to me. I have to interview you first before I let you into my group. I only want people who are humble, and I don't want the big ego. So I'm going to screen you out if you've got that. So for those who are interested, Peter Holgate on LinkedIn is the best. I'm not active on any other social media. I've got a dead channel on Twitter that I used to use 100 years ago that I don't use anymore. I think Facebook somewhere has a corporate record of me somewhere from 100 years ago. So maybe it makes me more exclusive. Maybe it makes me harder to find. But I find I save money on Google AdWords. I don't have to put effort into SEO. I can avoid the red ocean that exists there and just live in my little bubble of happiness where if somebody hears it would like an interesting conversation, mm-hmm. I'd be happy to have a talk. And then if it's a fit, we'll spend a couple of hours together. If it's not a fit, I'll wish you well. Typically, when people reach out, I always want to make sure I make introductions for them. So my little carrot to reach out is I have a fairly extensive Rolodex, and maybe I can connect you with somebody that'll help.
Nice. Well, it helps to be, or it helps to be reclusive if you don't have a whole lot of social media following you. You know, you don't have any paparazzi there. You don't.
and who are the bots that are following me anyway? Do I know them? Somebody's paying them to tag me. I see social media is driven by my pet theory at the moment. Social media is driven by two emotions. SRI, self-righteous indignation, and virtue signaling. And so I look at those, think, yeah, I'm not sure I need any of that, any more of that in my life. I'm trying to recover. Remember, I'm a recovering asshole. I need less of that. So I prefer genuine connections. Hit us up. Let's have a conversation like you and I are having now. And let's see how we can make the world better.
I love it. So we will, of course, have Peter's LinkedIn link in the show notes. And if for some reason, the time of listening to this, you can't find him, feel free to get a hold of me. we'll go and sniff him out, find him gallivanting somewhere around the world, I assure you. Awesome. So Peter, you have been absolutely awesome. Any last words for our peeps?
Yeah.
Oh, I forgot a question. Wait. I can't. Oh. I get to ask you. At what point in life did you know that you were a special kind of crazy enough to think that you could become an entrepreneur?
So I'll tell you another story because there's story time now. So I grew up in a rather rough home. My old man was a drinker, heavy drinker, became a bit aggressive at times. And I'm 14 years old and I've had enough of this. I'm doing karate and we're getting into fist fights in the house because I'm getting bigger, right? I'm getting some testosterone. So I leave home. I say, look, I'm going to do this on my own. So I left and I went and I moved into, I was a competitive road cyclist. And so I used to live in a bicycle shop. And then a church group took me in and gave me a place to stay. But in the bicycle shop, I saw that there were these what are called tubbies, a special kind of racing tire that are stitched. So instead of having a tube that's open, they're sealed and they're stitched. And the Tour de France, they've got this type of tire. And they're glued to the rim of the bicycle, very expensive. And I saw that there were a lot of punctures because they were made of Egyptian thread, Egyptian silk or something on the tire to make them as light as possible. And so I thought to myself, well, what if I could fix these? Because maybe they're like $100 a pop, but what if I could fix them for like 20 bucks? And so that way you could still use them for training rides. And if I did good enough, you wouldn't have to buy new ones. And so I started pitching this to the top level riders that I would be racing with. And they would say, sure, take it. And 20 bucks is nothing, right? So I'd take them back and I would start repairing them. You'd have to cut open the canvas at the back and then, you know, cut it open, fix the repair, and then take a needle and thread, you know, dental floss through it, have holes in my hands. But I learned how to do this. And it became quite a well-known thing that I fixed these tubular tires. So I'd come back with my shoulders filled with tires at the end of each race, you know, twice a week on the weekends and so on. And so I had a little business going where I'd repair tubular tires. I would outsource some to friends for $5 a tire. So I was making $15 a tire, outsource the balance to friends. And I was living for free in this church type environment. And I was going to school sporadically. You know, school was compulsory back in the day when I was growing up. So I'd attend enough school, you know, get caned once in a while for being late and not getting there in time. And I realized then that I wasn't going to have the same kind of regular mainstream life like anyone else did. And then after that, of course, I failed high school. You know, in these circumstances, you tend not to have any textbooks or you tend not to be allowed to get to go to university. And I was conscripted into the military. So we had conscription in South Africa at the time. And So I spent many years in the military. After I was 16 when I went in. So I spent time in the military and did all this crazy stuff in the army. And so I've had a very atypical career from, you know, where people typically go to school, go to college, you know, get a job and succeed. So probably when I was 14 and I left home, I'd set out on a different path to most people who are smarter than me. If I was smart, I would have just stuck it out, figured out how to do it, navigated school, gotten a good degree. I wanted to be a geologist. I'd love to have putted with rocks and found oil, found gold deposits. And I would have been super happy doing that.
That sounds like you're pretty super happy doing a whole lot of fun and crazy and wild sort of things. I love it. So I do have a question for you. If you could redo anything as far as your business and life career went, what would you have done differently?
Oh, wow. So much. The trouble with that question, of course, Michelle, is that as I think through, my brain gets overloaded with how many mistakes I made, how many stupid things I did.
I did a lot of stupid things.
Yeah, wow.
Well, let's not go with the stupid thing so much as had I not done that thing, it would have sped up this thing and I would have got this thing as opposed to not getting in trouble, not getting the lashings, not getting all of whatever came.
So the question is kind of what did I learn from, what's one lesson I should have learned and didn't learn?
Advice you'd give somebody else that's going through it and going, don't do that.
Yeah, I like to avoid giving advice as much as possible. I'm arrogant enough as it is, now I'm giving you advice on top of that. So for me, it was, I didn't quite understand how important, rule number two, right? It's all about relationships. I didn't understand how important alignment was and not getting into the wrong relationships. So it's okay to get into the wrong relationships as long as you can get out of them, right? So rule number one is don't get into the wrong. I got into the wrong relationships. Not that they were good or bad people, but it was my mistake to enter into the relationships with the wrong individuals. And that probably caused more stress in my life than anything else. Because when you're in relationship with the wrong parties, you can't solve problems, you can't reconcile, you can't move things forward. When you're in a relationship with the right people and things go wrong, no worries, you can fix it, you can solve it, you can collaborate. So I think my biggest mistake was getting into relationships, getting into business with the wrong people, rather than being very judicious about who I work with.
I love it. You have been absolutely awesome. Now, any last words for our peeps?
Yes. I wanted to say, if you haven't connected with Michelle, you need to. She's way more fun than she comes across as a podcast host. Seriously, connect with her. She's like more fun. She's been asking me the questions, but this is my endorsement of Michelle to finish Michelle's podcast for Michelle. Seriously, ton of fun. Absolutely have to connect with you. I think that you're doing this. It's awesome. I get your emails. I love how creative and dynamic you are within your business. So yeah, I'll just give you an endorsement back to close your own podcast. How's that?
You're so sweet. Thank you.
Yeah.
Awesome. And thank
Some
you
days
for
there's
being
more recovery.
Thank you so much for being here today. I appreciate it. And I know how valuable your time is.
All good. Thank you, Michelle.
Awesome. Peeps, this is Michelle Nedelec. Thank you for being here with us today. Be sure to subscribe to the show and share it with your friends. We love helping entrepreneurs grow. Thank you for listening to 7 to 8. If you're interested in upping your speaking game, be sure to connect with our guests with the links in the show notes and connect with me to see how we can help you get your tech done for you and help your speaking dreams come true.